Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet Preview Series presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always on all these preview pods, Corey Waldron. What's up, Corey?
What's up, Nick? You know, unlike all the other podcasts we've done, I prepped for this one slightly differently. I just spent the entire day listening to jazz symphonies. I figured that was the best way to get ready for tonight.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's kind of like a double meeting. You know, we'll be talking about the Jazz tonight, but, you know, we think that Jazz fans might be a little bit upset at what happened this past offseason. But let's talk about them from last season.
Well, I mean, last season, I mean, what can you say? They were the best team when it comes to points allowed, with only allowing 96 points per game. They were the worst team in pace, but they were the third best team in defensive rating. The Utah Jazz, from start to finish, were one of those teams that every night defensively you knew they were going to be tough to beat. Rudy Gobert immersed himself as a top five center in the league, one of the best rim protectors, almost won Defensive Player of the Year last year. Gordon Hayward, who they're going to miss desperately, he gave them a solid year offensively, probably one of his best offensive years. They got ISO Joe, whose veteran leadership was truly shine. I mean, he hit a couple of big-time shots in the playoffs for them. The Jazz were a very scrappy team, and, they show with that 51-31 record.
Yeah, and it was kind of something we saw coming from the Jazz. You know, the last few seasons we saw the improvements. We saw Gobert step up and then Hayward, and they finally made those big steps. Like you said, Gobert was Defensive Player of the Year in the vote for that, as well as Most Improved Player. Obviously, we know Gordon Hayward was a prized possession for agency this year. And, you know, defense was great. Top three defensive rating, like you mentioned. And it was the first time I think they've made the playoffs since the 2011-2012 season, and the first time they hit 50 wins since the 2009-2010 season. So quite some time since they had that type of success last year.
Yeah, and it's a team also that, similar to a couple of other teams we talked about, they had a lot of different lineups because there was a lot of injuries. I mean, they got George Hill. George Hill was missed almost 30 games last year. Ronnie Hood missed about 20 games last year. Derek Favors missed right around 30 games last year.
And Favors was never healthy either. And, you know, even in the playoffs, he, like, couldn't even jump. So, like, Favors almost missed the whole season, the condition that he played last year.
Right. So, this is, like, Quinn Snyder was also, I believe, a candidate for Coach of the Year.
Yep.
He was another guy who had to go through a lot of adversity to even get this team to be a five seed in the Western Conference, which we know is the toughest conference.
And I think the interesting thing about the Jazz, you mentioned all the injuries they had, and not even mentioning the guys who are playing through injury. You know, if they were healthy, they could have even been a higher seed. We're talking like 55 plus wins if they're healthy for a majority part of the season.
Yeah, and somehow this team still remained third defensive rating. It's just one of those, you know, next man up types of mentality, where it didn't really matter who plugged in, everybody was playing hard. And even guys like Joe Ingles, you know, we saw him, you know, last year emerge as, you know, a top six man in the league. And, you know, now with Hayward gone, he's going to have to step up a little bit more. But, you know, there was just a lot of guys in this team who were able to put in some big minutes.
Yeah, they had a lot of good basketball players on this team. You know, they had some nice depth. We've kind of mentioned on another pod in the playoffs, it kind of showed up when they had some injuries. You know, they did get that first round win in the playoffs, advancing to face Golden State. We obviously know what happened there. But, you know, still a successful season for the Jazz. It was kind of impressive and nice to see that youth finally make the jump to be a good team in the West, which isn't an easy task.
No, it's never easy out in the West.
But let's talk highlight. What's the highlight of the Jazz last season?
Highlight for last year, I'm going to go from the playoff win by Joe Johnson.
Yeah.
the ISO Joe driving down the paint and doing a nice little floater to bang in. And because that you know, that game winner was also, you know, it was a Jazz win, but it also was, you know, the first game one, I believe, of the series, and it was the first showing that Lob City Clippers team was coming to an end.
Yeah, and Joe Johnson, you know, it was finally nice to see him finally get the respect that he kind of deserved. You know, obviously for like the last five or six seasons, it's always been about the contract with Joe Johnson. You know, last year, finally playing on, you know, a small deal and doing big moments for the Jazz, people finally appreciate him a little bit more. But for me, I think the easy highlight is Rudy Gobert. You know, you mentioned it. He became one of the top centers in the league. I think he might have led the league in offensive and defensive rating. If he didn't lead it, he was top three in both categories. So, you know, he was elite. His rim protecting skills are crazy. He does a great job in the pick and roll. Obviously, this year he's going to have to make another big jump, but I really liked what I saw from Rudy Gobert. And The Jazz, I think, feel a little bit better. You know, obviously losing Hayward hurts, but when you have a player like Gobert still there, you know, it's someone that you really can build around.
Yeah, Nick, like you were saying with Gobert, I mean, just looking at his advanced numbers, like per 100 possessions, his defensive rating was 99. You know, that was the best on the team. And, you know, defense is so important in this league. And just having a rim protector like Gobert, who's also, you know, because he's only 24 years old, he's rather young. I mean, I know we saw him get hurt in the first round of the playoffs against the Clippers, so he wasn't even at full health against the Warriors. But this is a guy who, like you said, I mean, they're going to lean on him heavily. And there's no reason why this guy can't be, you know, one of the best defensive centers in the league for a couple of years to come.
Yeah, and if he can just add a little bit to his offensive game, you know, you're really talking about a player that's going to have a huge impact for the Jazz moving forward. And you said it, you know, only 24 years old, there's still plenty of time to add to that game. But biggest disappointment for the Jazz last year?
I'm just going to say injuries in general, you know, because I think George Hill had probably one of his best, you know, I'm not a very big George Hill's guy, as you know, and anyone who follows me here at OTG knows I'm not a huge George Hill guy, but George Hill was phenomenal last year. You know, to start off the season, he had a ton of big minutes for them. And then he got hurt, unfortunately, and he spent a lot of the year, you know, bouncing back and forth between, I think it was a toe injury. And, you know, that hurt. And then Rodney Hood was in and out of the lineup, like you mentioned. Derek Favors, obviously, as you said, was never healthy all season. You know, having all these injuries and still finishing in the fifth in the conference, it hurts a team that had so much potential not be able to play, you know, a full year with all their main five starters for chemistry purposes. Because heading into the playoffs, I really believe that if they were healthy enough, they could have been a tough matchup for the Warriors. I don't think they would have beat the Warriors, obviously. I think that Warriors team was destined to win a championship. But I do think they wouldn't have gotten swept if they had been at full power.
Yeah, no, I think they definitely could have pulled off, you know, a little bit of something, at least made it a little bit tougher for the Warriors because we know they cakewalked. But honestly, you know, we have the same one for this disappointment-wise. I was a little bit more specific. I went with the Derek Favors injury because I just felt like that killed him not having Favors. He just, you know, did not have a good season and everything just kind of was downhill for him. And even when Gobert was out, they really needed him and he couldn't step up. But I think it could have been any of the injuries, like you mentioned, George Hill, Hayward, Hood. And that kind of just messes up the rhythm of the team and kind of forces you to play a ton of lineups and kind of mess with your chemistry a little bit, especially for guys, you know, going from playing 25 minutes a night to maybe having to play only 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think about just for example, like Shelvin Mack, you know, he had to play a lot of minutes. Not that Mack's not a good basketball player. He's a very good role player. But, you know, you don't really want to have to lean on guys like Shelvin Mack and Dante Exum to run the point guard position. And that's what they had to do without George Hill because they really didn't have a solid point guard outside of Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely both those guys were a little bit inconsistent, but they did have some nice moments. Like you said, Chubba Max is a solid role player, but you don't want him starting for you. But let's talk ranking. The Jazz, you know, came in at number 12 in this ranking. What are your thoughts on that? Too high, too low, fair?
Too high. It's not overly high because I think this team does remain decent. But, I mean, it's tough to say that they're this high after losing their best player in Gordon Hayward. They're losing a guy who had a – you know, was their second leading scorer last year in George Hill. You know, there's going to be a lot of new pieces. I think, you know, adding Ricky Rubio will be nice because he's a very good playmaking defensive point guard. But, you know, I have a tough time thinking they're in this top 12.
Yeah, I think it's just a touch too high. Like you said, I still see them possibly competing for a playoff spot in the West, you know, in the 8 seed maybe. Defensively, they're going to be a really good defensive team. Just offensively and shooting-wise, there's going to be some real issues. You know, somebody's going to have to step up. They do have some young pieces. One thing the Jazz have done, even though they were – one thing, reason they were becoming a great team is because they have young guys on the team that were going to get better this year if Hayward and Hill stayed. But those guys didn't stay, so people can make a bigger jump. And obviously their draft pick, who we'll talk about in a little bit, has some major hype.
And this is another thing, you know, we're talking about the offense. You know, last year with a guy like Hayward and Hill – you know, they were the 28th ranked offense in points per game. You know, that scares me because you're losing your top two scorers from last year and you were already in the bottom five for offense.
Well, they were, I think, number 12 in offensive rating.
Right, so, yes, true.
So pace, I think one thing that would be interesting to keep an eye on for the Jazz this year is pace. You know, they're going to be lacking half-court options, you know, in terms of offense. So maybe they're going to try to get out and run a little bit more, especially with the type of defense they play. But let's talk draft picks. No, they made a trade in the draft early on. They traded Trey Lyles in the 24th pick to move up to number 13 to draft Donovan Mitchell. And Mitchell has kind of lit it up in summer league. People are really high on him. The Jazz fans are super excited about what he can do this year.
I love him. I mean, I don't think there's a jump shot coming into the NBA that's as smooth looking as Donovan Mitchell. I know he's a little bit smaller, and he's a 6'3", more of a two guard than a one guard, obviously. So he's a little bit undersized for his position. But I mean, last year at Louisville, you know, he raised his numbers from his freshman year by, you know, double. He went from averaging 17.4 points per game to 15.6. His field goal percentage dropped a little bit, but his 3-point percentage went up. You know, this guy, like you said, in summer league was balling out as well. You know, he's a very aggressive scorer. I do think, you know, because they're going to be looking for new options on offense, you know, obviously I think he starts off on the bench, but Donovan Mitchell could have a very big impact earlier than later for the Jazz.
Yeah, like you said, he can shoot the ball. He can score the ball. He's a good athlete. You know, the size is a question, but he plays with some real tenacity. So, you know, and with the NBA going the way it is, positionless basketball, you know, 6'3", it's not that big a deal because he can still play a little bit of the point. So I'm really excited for Donovan Mitchell, like you said. I think Jazz fans are kind of hyped, and they're kind of get a chance to see what he can do this season a little bit more than if Gordon Hayward and George Hill stayed.
And not to mention, you know, they're not just adding a guy who's very good offensively. He's also a very good defender still.
Yeah.
He's a decent off-guard defender. Because even though he's 6'3", he still has a 6'10 wingspan. And that's extremely big for a guy who's undersized, the fact that he can still defend, you know, the point guards and the shooting guards. And because, you know, the new age of smaller, you know, small ball lineups, because of how athletic Donovan Mitchell is as well, he can still defend a lot of those kind of guys.
Yeah, I think a great pick for the Jazz. Smart move to trade up here. Trey Lyles was somebody, it just didn't ever really feel like it was working out in Utah. Even when they made the pick, you know, a lot of people questioned the pick. And, you know, moving number 24 in Trey Lyles was not a big deal. But they also made another trade. They traded up two spots in the bottom of the first round. They traded pick 30 and 42 for Tony Bradley, you know, who figures to be maybe Rudy Gobert's backup.
I mean, you obviously needed to address somebody just because, you know, you have to have a backup center in the NBA. You know, coming out of UNC, you know, he's 6'10". He's a baby, though. You know, I don't know how much of a 20-year-old can impact right away. You know, he's a little bit smaller at 6'10". He only weighs, I think, like 250 pounds. You know, he'll be a work in progress. I don't know if we'll see him, you know, obviously play right away in the NBA. He did average 19 and 13, almost 14 rebounds in college. But I think, you know, he'll probably start off in the G League or possibly start off as like a third string center.
Yeah, no, I think you're actually right. He's more so the backup of the future for Gobert, somebody they can work with. He'll spend time in the G League. They did sign a backup center this year. So, and especially when you have Gobert, you don't really need to worry about someone playing a ton of minutes. Obviously, your center can't play the whole game, but it's not a huge concern.
But, you know, in the upwards of 32 to like 34 minutes per game, regardless.
Then also in the second round with the 55th pick, they drafted Nigel Williams-Goss. So, you know, never know with those late second round picks. We'll see what happens with him. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know, it's another G League prospect. Yeah, there you go. You know, because the Jazz, like we said, have had a lot of injuries in the past. You know, it's not crazy to think that, you know, it's not bad having all these rookies, because a lot of the time you're gonna, you know, especially in the NBA, it's a long season, and it, say the Jazz sputter out of the gate, you know, after losing Hayward and Hill, say they're not as good early on, maybe they struggle, you know, it will give guys who are probably going to start off in the G League a better chance of coming into the NBA and at least getting a chance to play.
Yeah, and like I said in the past, you know, one reason the Jazz were, you know, such a great team or looking to be, you know, a good team in the West in the future too is because they have young guys who are getting better. So they do a good job of kind of replenishing their talent. You know, obviously they did lose some two talented veterans this offseason, but they did add some nice young pieces will kind of help weigh that out. Let's talk more additions. You know, they had a feeling they were going to lose George Hill, so they pulled the trigger on a trade for Ricky Rubio. What are your thoughts on Rubio? How do you think he'll fit in Utah?
Well, they really got Rubio in hopes that it would help keep Gordon Hayward, because Rubio and Hayward have a mutual friendship, and Hayward had mentioned that he would like to play with Rubio. But, you know, Rubio is going to be a nice piece, I think, alongside Gobert. He's a very good playmaking point guard, probably a better playmaking point guard than George Hill. And he's still a decent defender, but he won't bring you the offense George Hill has. You know, he's as we know, a very inconsistent shooter. He hasn't really developed much offensively. But, you know, playing alongside, you know, this is a guy who averaged last year 9.1 assists per game. And that's playing alongside Wiggins and Towns and LaVine for, you know, some part of the season. So I do think offensively those assist numbers possibly he might be able to average, you know, 10 or 11 assists next year because he does have a decent shooting core around him with Gobert down low.
Do you have – how much of a concern do you have with Ricky Rubio in Utah? You know, obviously there's a good chance they'll start Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert and the lack of Ricky Rubio shooting and then the loss of a Gordon Hayward and a George Hill shooting. How much do you think that it's going to impact the Utah offense since, you know, Ricky Rubio is not a good three-point shooter?
A lot. I mean, I made mention to it a little bit before when I mentioned the points per game. I'm concerned about this team offensively. You know, I that's why I think this rating was a little bit too high as well. You know, I'm just looking at the spacing of this team. Like, you're a big, like, as you've mentioned, Nick, I know you're a very big guy on spacing the floor. And, you know, if you start Favors, Gobert, and Ricky Rubio, you're already hurting yourself spacing-wise. You know, I'm not sure how this team will be offensively. And yes, it's a very big concern.
Yeah, like the honestly, when we'll kind of talk about the starting lineup in a little bit, but that's like the Jazz are almost going in the opposite direction of the rest of the NBA. You know, everybody in the NBA is going after shooting, spacing, and mostly offense, where the Jazz kind of are making their focus more about defense and slowing down the pace, which we'll kind of talk about a little bit more as we talk about the free agent signings. You know, they picked up a guy like Jonas Jerebko, Tabo Sefolosha. They also brought back, I'm going to give this a pronunciation try, Ipe Udo, back into the NBA. He played overseas for a little bit, but he's a defensive-minded center. So these three NBA veterans, they all speak to me and say, you know, defense and toughness. So what are your thoughts on these signings? Who sticks out to you?
I mean, Tabo Sefolosha is still a very good defender. I believe I mentioned on the pod before, he's still the only player I know that wears Air Maxes on the court. He doesn't wear basketball shoes. He likes to wear Air Maxes.
Which is crazy. Crazy.
Yeah. You know, defensively, he's probably better than Hayward. I mean, he's a little bit older now, obviously, going to the backside of his career, going to be 33 next year. He's still a very good three-point shooter, you know, career 34% three-point shooter. Joe Jerebko had a very good year in Boston last year. You know, he's a stretch four. He kind of fits in the new age in the NBA where he can shoot the three ball. He's not very good defensively. He's, you know, at times actually a liability. So I don't think he'll get a ton of minutes. But, you know, when you want to take out Derek Favors and, you know, add more offense at the four, you know, because you lost Trey Lyles, who was a pretty good stretch four. You know, he didn't have great moments, but he had some good moments as a young player. Jerebko can certainly give you some decent stretches. But, you know, if Quinn Snyder wants to keep this team very defensively minded, I'm not sure how much Jerebko helps. You know, none of these moves – you know, scream out and like a fist pump type of win. They're just solid to keep the Jazz rather competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all, like you said, solid moves. You know, Jerebko might not be a great defender, but he still fits kind of that energy and toughness that they're probably looking for. You know, he's going to put the effort in. And like you said, Tabo Sefolosha is a good defender. I think Gordon Hayward probably still a little bit better at Sabo at this age. Udo, you know, he'll probably, like I mentioned before, be the backup for Gobert. So, the Jazz kind of doubled down on defense this offseason. You know, they knew losing Hayward and Hill, they weren't going to be able to find offensive players to replace them. So they're like, why not just be, you know, an elite defensive team? They kind of took over the grit and grind title from Memphis.
You're right, Salt Lake City. You know, they're going to be – everyone's going to go into Salt Lake City and have to get their wounds salted afterwards.
Seriously, though, because they're – I mean, that's the only chance they have of being a really good team. And like I said before, they're kind of going in the opposite direction. Everybody else is looking, you know, run the highest pace, you know, all offense, shoot threes. The Jazz, like we said, there's not a ton of three-point shooting in that possible starting lineup. You know, they're going to play a lot of defense. So I think it's going to be a real interesting year for the Jazz. And I'm kind of interested to see if this kind of idea will work against, you know, elite offensive teams.
It might be able to work on certain some nights. I mean, another concern, I'm just looking at the team, you know, their second-best offensive option or second-best offensive shooter at this point might actually be Joe Johnson. And I'm not sure how much of a good thing that is to have a 36-year-old as probably your third best or second best shooter.
Yeah, that's a guy we'll probably talk about a little bit later. But, you know, Joe Johnson's probably still going to have a pretty good role in this team. And, you know, at his age, you'd want to probably take his role down a little bit less. But, you know, they're probably going to need him to have another solid season. Let's talk departures, though. Let's start with Gordon Hayward. Obviously, you know, there was some hope for Hayward up to the last minute, but he'd ended up going to Boston. How do you feel about this? Do you think Hayward made the right decision? Should Jazz fans be upset with him or just let it go?
This is completely different from the Kevin Durant scenario where Durant left, obviously, to join the Warriors. So I saw some people trying to draw a connection between the type of leaving. It's nowhere near the same. Gordon Hayward wasn't leaving a team contending for a title. The Jazz weren't close to contending for a title. They were stuck in I can draw a connection to Hayward and Paul George. You know, these two guys are on teams that are very, you know, middle of the pack. You know, they're very defensively minded teams. There was nothing very special. And, you know, if you want to win a ring, you know, these smaller market teams just don't generally have that big of a window. And with the health issues that have been happening in Utah, Hayward being one of the only guys who can stay healthy, it just makes sense for a guy like Hayward to go to Boston, where, you know, everyone wants to play in Boston. It's one of the most illustrious franchises in the NBA. It was just time for him to move on as a player.
Well, I have a question for you. If Hayward would have stayed in Utah and hypothetically say they have Ricky Rubio and they make the additions they made, do you think Utah would be a better team than Boston, or what do you think about that?
In that scenario, I think Boston's still the better team, because I think no matter what, that Kyrie Irving trade probably still happens. So I'm going to say yes, Boston still remains the better team. I don't think Utah gets much better if Hayward stays and Ricky Rubio is their starting point guard.
Good point. I mean, I think the spacing issue would still be a problem. I think that he would be better off staying if it was George Hill, because three-point-wise, it makes a lot of sense. And then Hayward still gets a lot of touches because, like we've mentioned in the past, George Hill's not a guy who needs the ball all the time. You know, he's happy playing a little bit off-ball. So that's an interesting point there, too. Also, obviously, losing Hayward sucks. And losing – anytime you lose a player of that caliber, anytime you lose somebody like a top 10 at their position, it's really hard to replace them, you know, especially in one off-season.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're a Jazz fan, you have the right to feel upset. I mean, this was a guy you drafted.
The future looked really bright. Like, I mean, they probably wouldn't have won the West, but maybe in a few years, if some of these young guys, you know, develop nicely, like a Donovan Mitchell, a Dante Exum, you know, things could look really good for the Jazz when the Warriors window kind of ends, if it ever does.
No, I agree. You know, defense is what, you know, what's the mantra? Defense wins championships. So, you know, this is the right type of format to win it. You just have to have the stars in place to put the firepower behind the defense.
Yeah, especially when you're a defensive-minded team, you need, you know, at least one elite offensive player who can kind of give you buckets when you need them. But, you know, we mentioned him, George Hill. They lost him. What are they going to lose with George Hill?
Well, they're going to lose somebody who can pick up the slack when Hayward struggles. And now that they both are gone, they're losing two guys who can – on a given night, kind of carry an offense. I think George Hill last year added probably his most consistent, deadly three-point jump shot of his career to date. I mean, last year he was pretty much a marksman. He was extremely consistent from out there. Defensively, George Hill is, you know, he can guard one and twos. You know, he's a little bit small to guard threes. You know, he's not a playmaking point guard, so I don't think – playmaking-wise, they're losing much, obviously. I think Ricky Rubio is a much better playmaker, but you're certainly going to miss a guy who shot 40% from three last year when you're getting a guy who can barely shoot over 30.
Yeah, I think the three-point shooting is going to be an issue. And defensively, I know some people are really high on Rubio. I still see George Hill probably, you know, as a good defender as well. What are your thoughts on losing, you know, Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, and Shelvin Mack, and Jeff Withey? You know, out of those four guys, who do you think is going to have the biggest, you know, loss to the team?
I mean, I'm kind of surprised that Boris Diaw had to go overseas to find a team in the NBA. I know he had a very bad playoffs, but, I mean, last year in the regular season, he wasn't awful. You know, he averaged, you know, 4 points per game in, you know, 17 minutes. He had a couple of rebounds and assists. You know, obviously he's not the Boris Diaw from his days with the Spurs and so on, but, you know, he was still a pretty competent player. You know, losing Trey Lyles for Ricky Rubio is okay. Shelvin Mack is a backup point guard. You know, you, now, I mean, if you're Dante Exum, I mean, this is this is your moment, because getting rid of Shelvin Mack just means that they're putting all their eggs in one basket.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like you said, you know, I think Boris Diaw probably didn't get any offers from a contending team. That's probably where he wanted to go. So he's probably like, you know, I'll just sign overseas. It'll be a little bit easier for me. And yeah, I think he has an MBA out in his contract. So say playoff time comes and somebody wants to sign him, he's good to go.
I'm sure he'll be back then.
Yeah, Trey Lyles, you know, he never, like I mentioned before, he never really worked out. Shelvin Mack, you know, role player. And Jeff Withey, you know, not really a big deal. So I didn't think, other than, you know, obviously losing a player like Gordon Hayward and then a player like George Hill is really going to hurt. And they didn't really replace them in terms of the offseason signings they made, other than maybe the trade for Ricky Rubio kind of swap for George Hill, but they're different type of players. So there definitely is going to be some issues, and young guys are going to have to step up. But let's talk starters. Who's starting for the Jazz next season?
Oh, okay, so obviously Ricky Rubio is at the point guard. Rodney Hood is going to be at the two guard. The three guard, you know, I guess Joe Ingles starts now. You know, I really like him as a six man, but I think you have to start him. And then you have Derek Favors at the four and Gobert at the five.
Yep, same lineup for me, which is really, like, this is going to be an interesting lineup. Favors is going to have to hit, like, a mid-range jump shot. Rubio's going to just have to shoot a lot better this season. They need him to be a solid shooter. Like, Rodney Hood and Joe Ingles can hold their own, and they're going to need Rodney Hood to really pick it up as a scorer. Joe Ingles, you know, his scoring is a little bit inconsistent, but he's a high basketball IQ type player. He's going to make good passes, set Favors and Gobert up in good spots. But the paint is going to be mighty crowded. Luckily, Rudy Gobert is, you know, a lanky dude. He should be able to finish over people, but a lot of attention inside with the lack of spacing for these starters.
Yeah, you know, and Rodney Hood is already a guy who doesn't necessarily pass the ball a lot in general. And I wouldn't be surprised if next year especially you see that guy doing a lot more trying to get himself going moments, because they're definitely going to need somebody on this offense outside of ISO Joe who's not going to be scared to take the ball and try and make something happen.
Yeah, and he's going to have to hit tough shots. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of attention on you when you have the ball. So, I mean, Hood can be that guy. He's shown flashes of dropping 30 in a game. So, I mean, he's somebody I would be excited about if I was a Jazz fan. Breakout starter, who's busting out this year and having a big season for the Jazz?
You know, I think Hood's a very good candidate, but I'm going to go with the easy guy, with Rudy Gobert. You know, I think entering his fifth year in the NBA, a guy who's gotten better and better each year so far in the NBA, it's time to take his game to another level. I'm thinking this guy next year, Nick, averages right around, you know, 18 to 19 points per game. And, you know, he might pull down a career high, like 14 or 15 rebounds per game with 2.5 blocks per game. You know, I think this guy needs to be tremendous. I think they're going to have to do a lot of pick and rolls. I think, you know, Ricky Rubio is a very good pick and roll point guard as well. You know, that's a big thing that he got to do with Karl-Anthony Towns. I think it actually really helped Karl-Anthony Towns develop quicker, is the fact that he had a point guard like Rubio who's very good at getting others involved. And I think that'll, you know, Gobert has never had that kind of point guard. So if he's already averaged, you know, 14 points per game, I think with a guy like Rubio, it will definitely add, you know, three to four more baskets per game.
Yeah, I think that's a reason that Gobert will have a big year is Rubio. And I think obviously the fact that he didn't take a lot of shots last year, I believe Rudy Gobert shot under 10 times a year. I think it was closer to like 8 or 7 shots a game. So he'll get some more shots, you know, expect him to improve. He's been grinding in the gym. Gobert's the easy choice. I was going to go with him, but I'm going to switch it up, and I think I'm going to go with Joe Ingles. You know, I think he could have a really nice season just because he's going to be starting now, and they're going to really need him to step up. And a combination one, and I'm going to kind of go with Derek Favors too. Because if Favors is healthy, they're going to need him to score the basketball, and he's going to have to really dominate inside offensive rebounding-wise and get a lot of putbacks.
Yeah, Derek Favors is definitely a guy who's going to need to show, you know, he's going to have to become a more of a stretch four. I'm really interested to know if he can possibly develop a jump shot, because, you know, I'm worried, you know, the one thing that could hurt Gobert is the fact that, you know, him and Favors both have to sit in the paint constantly on offense and clog it up.
Yeah, that's going to be a real issue. They did have some success in the past with it, just because a team doesn't really necessarily have two front court players like Gobert and Favors, so they've had a good impact. But with Rubio there, that could make it a little bit more difficult just because that lack of, you know, floor spacing with him.
But I wonder, too, how Ingles can handle being a more featured player in offense. You know, as we know, last year, you know, he averaged 7.1 points per game. you know, but he only took like five shots a game. So he's going to have, you know, the volume is going to increase, and I wonder how that translates for him on the court.
Yeah, they're going to need him to really, you know, I think he was one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA last season. They're going to really need him to shoot a lot of threes because he's going to be the only one out there that's, you know, an elite-level three-point shooter. And then we have three guys who, you know, aren't three-point shooters at all. But breakout bench player, who's going to pop off the bench and give him some pop?
My bench player, I'm going with I'm going to go with Donovan Mitchell. I think that's the easiest one.
Yeah, for sure.
They're going to need someone who can be an instant offense kind of guy, you know, and I don't know if Alec Burks can be that guy. Dante Exum hasn't showed that. Raul Nato hasn't truly shown that. You know, there's a lot of guys on the bench who are very unproven. Donovan Mitchell, obviously, is another guy who's very unproven. But, you know, I think if anyone has a chance to, you know, be an instant offense kind of guy and will have more of the reins on offense because he's a pretty good ball handler as well to make something happen, I'm going to go with Mitchell.
Yeah, that was my choice as well. I think Mitchell is just a guy, you know, he gives them some hope, and he's somebody who can really kind of get better as the season progresses and kind of help them build for the future and maybe give them that late push in the playoff run.
They're going to need it. If they want to make the playoffs next year, guys like Donovan Mitchell, guys like Dante Exum, you know, these guys who haven't had huge feature roles, you know, being offensively talented guys yet in the NBA, they're going to need to step up big this year.
Yeah, agreed. You know, that's one bright spot the Jazz do have in their back pocket is they have some young guys that can get better and kind of make the season go a little bit smoother than they anticipated. Let's talk wins. Best case scenario for the Jazz.
They're not going to win 50 games this year. I can tell you that much. best case scenario, I think, is 44 wins. I think that's the best case scenario.
Yeah, I think, you know, between 44 and 46 wins, best case scenario, they play elite level defense. You know, they're shutting everybody down. Some of these young guys, like we mentioned, like an Exum, a Hood, you know, a Donovan Mitchell, they have big seasons. Gobert looks, you know, like the best center in the NBA. He has a 20-10 season. I think that's, you know, what the Jazz would need to kind of get in that 44 to 46 win range.
Yeah, I think, you know, this season is hugely on that man's shoulders.
And Ricky Rubio needs to at least shoot a solid percentage from three that people respect him a little bit. Not a great percentage, just something where, you know, they have to at least keep an eye on him on the three-point line. Worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario is that spacing and that shooting becomes an issue. And they, you know, they double team Gobert in the post and they dare guys like Ricky Rubio to shoot. They dare guys, you know, to who aren't proven to be more of an offensive like Rodney Hood. They're probably going to want the ball in a guy like Rodney Hood's hand more often than not. So I'm going to say worst case scenario, this team wins, you know, 36 games, 37 games. And it's not even because of injury. It's just because they don't have enough offense.
Yeah. I think like the, you know, mid 30s is not, you know, far fetched, especially if they have the offensive issues. So I have them, you know, worst case 38 wins, you know, things just don't go right. And like you said, the offense just sucks and they don't have the three-point shooters and they end up having to make a lineup change or maybe they try to move some of these veterans on this team and get some more young assets. But realistically, what do you expect from the Jazz next year?
Realistically, I'm predicting 40 wins. I don't think the Jazz make the playoffs. I think they're going to fall, you know, just short probably. They'll be right around the 10 seed, maybe an 11 seed. And it's tough if you're a Jazz fan hearing that, I'm sure. But, you know, there's too much talent in the West, and there's just not enough firepower on that roster for me to see this team being truly a playoff team.
I think with the rules and the way the NBA is set up, just offense wins nowadays. Obviously, you need to play D, but, you know, there's so many advantages to the O, and I think that's going to make it a little bit more difficult for the Jazz. You know, I think they could still possibly sneak in the 8 seed. I have them at 42 wins. I think, you know, an 8 seed is realistic, maybe grab a few more wins here or there because they can grind out some games. And, you know, I think they're a pretty good home team. So I think that would be something that they kind of build off of. But it's not going to be the type of season that, you know, you were kind of expecting at the end of last year.
Yeah, and, you know, we've of the couple teams we've talked about already on this podcast series, you know, I already have three of those teams being a playoff team, the Jazz just being behind them, and that's the Pelicans, Clippers, and Portland. I think those teams are all slightly better than Utah. And then we know we're not even in the top 10 yet.
Yeah, so it's we've mentioned it like 100 times in this pod. The Western Conference is stacked. You know, every team has some real talent on it, and even the bad teams can get lucky on a night from here or there. So it's going to be an interesting season for the Jazz. And, you know, if they can bounce back, you know, a lot of that will be thankful to Rudy Gobert and Quinn Snyder. You know, being able to kind of take this team and make the playoffs, I think that'd be a really big deal, especially after losing a player like Hayward and Hill.
Yeah, you know, Quinn, you know, Coach of the Year candidate, with how he dealt with injuries last year and the rotations he had to put out there, he obviously earned a name for himself. He would certainly add to his resume, like you're saying, Nick, if he can push this team over the hump into the playoffs once again.
Which I don't really think is far-fetched. I wouldn't bet money on it, but I think it's a real possibility. But let's talk emoji. The truth. Today I have the heartbreak emoji, you know, the broken heart. Gordon Hayward left you guys, and I know that you're feeling it, and you're really in your feelings.
Damn. I'm upset because I picked the same one.
That is the first.
Yeah, that is the first. I was picking the heartbreak. But I mean, my meaning is a little bit different. Mine was the double meaning one. Mine was, you know, they lost Hayward, and you're probably going to miss the playoffs this year. So mine was like a double heartbreak. But, yeah, I went with the heartbreak. I'm not going to change it. Because I think, that, like you said, Nick, just now, the heartbreak is pretty fitting. You know, they lost their star in Hayward. And then just for me, I think the playoffs are going to be a little bit out of reach.
Yeah, and then, you know, it just, like, sucks because Hayward was, like, homegrown. And he really looked like he was the face of the Jazz. And he became such a great player in Utah. So I could see why the fans would be upset. And we're not making fun of you for being upset because it just sucks whenever your team loses a big-time player like that.
No, I mean, I lost Paul George, guys, and I'm still emotionally distraught.
But and what do? You watch League Pass to get rid of that. So what's your League Pass ranking for the Jazz? Let me give a prediction. I feel like it's going to be under 5.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're not wrong. You know, unfortunately, Jazz fans, you did lose Gordon Hayward and you did lose George Hill. So this will hamper my League Pass rating. I'm only going to give you guys – the Utah Jazz, a 3. I think, you know, I think the pace is going to be an issue with me and the spacing. I don't know how fun this team's going to be to watch. I think Rudy Gobert will be fun to watch at times, obviously, because the man with the block shots and how effective he can be around the rim will be fun. But unless he's playing a team I want to see, I just don't see myself tuning in very often to see the Utah Jazz.
Corey, with a rough ranking, I'm going to give him, you know, a 5 out of 10 because I'm really intrigued to see if this can work. And I want to see what happens with, you know, an elite offensive team plays a team like the Jazz, you know, that slow down the pace to nothing. Maybe not the Warriors, but another team that play at a high pace that are pretty good offensively, but not good defensively. I want to kind of see how that matchup would go. So I'll give him a respectful 5 out of 10. I can see why people aren't really high and watch them. For some reason, I've been following the Jazz for the last few seasons. I've liked watching the young guys develop, a Gobert, a Favors, and, you know, Hayward, even though he's gone. So I'll go with a 5 out of 10. But you'd watch the Utah Jazz over what TV show that you like?
This is a rather tough one, and I know you like this show I'm about to pick. I'm going with Burn Notice.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to find someone new to do the top 10 with.
Okay. And that's it, boys. As you just heard, I'm just fired on the Utah Jazz pot. Burn Notice was a very good show. It was on USA for a while. It's about a spy. I know Nick was a big fan of it. It's a good show, but, you know, I like we've mentioned, or like you've mentioned, Nick, you know, we do both love the NBA. So eventually every show I like will get some kind of shade thrown at it. But I would watch the Jazz over Burn Notice.
I'm kind of hurt because you've been throwing a lot of shade at the Jazz. So, you know, unintentionally, you're throwing all that shade at Burn Notice right now. But I'm going to go with, you know, I had the Jazz at a 5 out of 10. So my disrespect's not as bad as yours. I'm going to go with Big Bang Theory. You know, it's a pretty good show. You know, I watch it when it's on. It's not one of those shows that I'm going to be like, all right, I need to binge watch this. I need to follow the plot line. You know, it's not one of those binge-worthy shows. It's kind of like one, you know, it's on TV. I'll give it a watch.
Yeah, you know, I think the only time I've ever watched that show is when I'm at your house. And I burnt. That's a Faye specialty, that show.
Yeah, and I'm not really a huge fan, so it's just kind of like, you know, I'm trying to be nice and I let that go on TV. But that wraps it up for today. Corey, thank you for hopping on as always, and thank you everybody for listening. Let us know how we did. You know, let us know on Twitter at OG Basketball. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. Rate us. Let us know we did a good job, bad job, whatever.
If you're really sad, listen to some sad jazz blues.